And here we are. So welcome, everyone, to call number 4 on this Elevate Your Life series. And the actual entitled Ikigai and the 7 Rituals of Self-Mastery. So wait till we get to that one. But first, we've got to take a look at our little homework research challenge assignment here. So we went to the website to look up the reflection on leadership. And if you did that, you looked at it and said, okay, there it is. And simply it states, just a reflection I had probably a year ago, and here it is. I think you're a leader if you're probably, and you probably want to be a good one. You need to act like one. You need to portray good habits, good language, do the right things at home, work, wherever the day takes you. You desire to be a good role model. You teach right versus wrong. You want the team to succeed, and you realize it's not about your needs. There's a certain maturity in accepting this responsibility. You realize you can't fumble. Others are counting on you. What you say and what you do have to match up. You know your limitations, but refuse to accept them. You know deep down can't, never could. So take your vitamins, take a good look at these thoughts and these lessons of good leadership. And so there they were. And I'll let you know that the first one that was listed there, acknowledge the work of others, was the big winner from this group this time. So that was who responded most to that one. And we did get quite a few on known as self-made. Take the high road, that was a close second. Constantly work on your listening skills. I believe the only one that was not actually commented on was use the phrase, I'm sorry more. And that probably is one that we could use a little bit more work on. At any rate, let's just go and read a couple responses that we had here. And one of my favorites here is, to me, praise in public and correct in private is crucial for leadership today. So there is a trademark phrase right there. And Alan, if you don't trademark that one within a week, I'm taking it. Okay, so praise in public, correct in private. That's a big leadership skill, because you even today you still see this happening in your daily walks in restaurants and shopping centers. Everywhere you go, you can see the boss ridiculing somebody. Shouldn't happen. Really shouldn't happen. So I love that one. And further, today's fundamental leadership leads to address what this generation needs more than anything else, praise. Simply the most important thing, people need to stay motivated in today's landscape. Feedback is important. Correction, rebuking, we say, but not until you build enough praise points, as I call it. My experience says a person needs to have 5 praise moments before you can deliver a learning moment. So there's some insight right there, and that's a nice reflection. So more positive. And so the next one, the acknowledge the work of others. And one of our leaders quoted from Zig Ziglar. I thought that's always a good one. And that is, you can get anything you want in life if you help enough people get what they want. And that's an old, wise, sage philosophy right there. You know, raising up others, that's elevating others. And we go further to say, even acknowledging small improvements from day to day can change the positive mindset of people. A lot of times people's hard work goes unnoticed, bringing themselves down. Positive reinforcement, more importantly, showing that person that you care about them, as well as attributing their hard work, they'll move forward. Positive reinforcement goes a long way in encouragement, and etc. So that does remind me, actually, and I may have shared this once or twice before, but graduate school in writing the thesis. And so had to work at what was called the Home for Wayward Boys Achievement Place. And so we had 8 kids in a house. I was a teaching parent. And it really was pretty interesting, because what you had to do with these parents who were just pretty much sleeping all weekend because they were so exhausted working with these special needs kids, but it was always pointing out the positive. Behavior modification, you've probably heard of it. But you would sit around the table and you would see the boys interact, and you would just literally have the 360 and say, listen, Sid, I want to give you 1,000 points for not spitting on Joe. And Joe, I want to give you 1,000 points for not swinging back at Sid. So those were teaching moments, but really what we're doing is trying to reinforce the positive. And in the real world, it works just as well with special needs. And so one other phrase here, the leadership characteristic bullet, I love always take the high road, means always take the high road. And they go on to say, if we're always being watched, thus it's important to do the right things at all times. As leaders, we have to set the standard. If we deviate from that standard, we just set a new standard. So our actions and our decisions are based on, and therefore, they do have exponential results. It sounds like, to me, the manifesto. And you might remember that one. If you're good, be good always. If you're true, be true always. And if you're the best damn sub sandwich on the planet, you know that one. So there is something to say about that, and you can argue that sometimes because you really, you know, have to look at that word always. And then we did at the end, we had one on talking about love, and I love it because they quoted Corinthians 13. You've probably heard that one at a wedding or two. But we say you have to say it. Yes, you have to say it, but you have to also put it in action. And I bring that one out because that's going to be a lot of next week's call. Next week's call, I'll give you a sneak preview. The 8 magic words. All right, so let's move on, and we'll take a look now at our lesson today. So Ikigai is actually spelled I-K-I-G-A-I. If you want to look it up and play with this, there's even some videos out there. But Ikigai is a word that, and it's pronounced Ikigai, but it's actually a phrase that comes out of Okinawa. And outside of Okinawa, you probably know it's close to Japan. These are one of the blue zones in the world where people live past 100. So they have these centenarians. They're happy places. There's a dozen happy places in the world that just because of whatever. And we actually have one in Northern California. And mostly it's because people live in the mountains and drink wine. And, you know, there's always something relative. And these guys from Okinawa, there's like 3,000 of them there, all in their villages, in the community, but they all eat the same plant-based diet, plenty of green leafy vegetables. They avoid meat and dairy and sugar, all those things. But for some reason, in this area, they just are happy people, live forever. And why is that? They use this word ikigai, and the word there means, why do you wake up? And you interview these people, and they have this inner sense of purpose, this intrinsic sense of purpose and why they're here. What do you live for? And so they're involved in their village, and they always have a purpose. So we talked about purpose. We touched on purpose earlier in this lesson. We're going to finish it out here again in this series. But the quote we're going to use is simply, the purpose of life is a life of purpose. And these people actually believe that. But we look at the experiments in science, and we see that when you have this higher sense of purpose, it stimulates the oxytocin production. We talk about this on Friday mornings. And it also helps build the trust. And we say trust and purpose mutually reinforce each other. That produces happiness. Joy on the job comes from doing purpose-driven work with a trusted team. And that comes out of the Harvard Business Review, which we read a lot of. And we, speaking of trust, we trust their research, but you can see that this is chemically based. We talk a lot about food being chemically based, serotonin, and just really having purpose changes your mindset. It actually physically changes. And so we look at what some other people have to say about that, and I look at John Gordon's book, The Seed. I actually even quoted his in my book, and this is what he writes about this subject. When we find life, and our purpose. Live it, it will provide the ultimate fuel for a meaningful life. You may not build libraries around the world, but you can find bigger purpose in reading to your children. You may not feed the homeless every day, but you can nourish your employees and customers with a smile, kind word, and care. And while you may not start your own nonprofit organization, you can begin a charity initiative at work. After all, charity means love in action. You can make a difference every day and touch the lives of everyone you meet. Or as I sarcastically comment, say, or not. Just go along the average. And a little bit further thought on this one, Rick Warren, bestseller, The Purpose-Driven Life, and I love that book. If you haven't seen it, I put that one on my list. The Purpose-Driven Life. He says, when we understand our purpose in life, food tastes better. Music sounds better. We tap into what's called a supernatural source that makes our life better. And we will often talk about that in class, but usually we leave people with this thought when they come to the leadership group, and that's this little phrase. A customer is someone who is the most important visitor on our premises. He's not dependent on us. We are dependent on him. He's not an interruption in our work. He's the purpose of it. He's not an outsider in our business. He's part of it. We're not doing him a favor by serving him. He's doing us a favor by giving us the opportunity to do so. And a couple years ago, our ops word in the country was purpose. And so we know that, you know, once we live this life of purpose, it does actually change us. So I think we'll just use one more thought from the Eastern part of the world, the Eastern religions. There was a concept there you may have heard of called Dharma. And this Dharma is what's life's purpose. It's from way back from Sanskrit. But when we do this again, we say we achieve inner harmony, peace. And you might remember we talked about last week, the pursuit of happiness. Once we have humility, that leads to the harmony, that leads to happiness. And we're saying, well, what's the common denominator here? Purpose. And they go on to say, there's, you know, we need that self-knowledge, we need that self-enlightenment. And it really reminded me of a course in college, liberal arts again, sociology, and the self-awareness. And it's a funny thing, we don't have any courses in school about self-awareness, self-reflection. That's why we're kind of pushing it on you right now. And really, you know, we're kind of behind, I think, as a nation. But there was really a premise that we really don't understand. And I think it's the ultimate goal of a leader. If we don't know ourselves, we can't really know others. And so that's where I opened up that old book, and it was the Johari Window. And this was this goes way back, the Johari Window. But think of a window right now, a window pane with four panels, let's say. And so one of those panels, we're looking at it, it's called the open and free panel. What you know about yourself and what others know about you. So it's kind of looking into a mirror, but it's kind of let's say, transparent in that particular panel. Then there's the blind panel, what a person doesn't know about themselves, but others do. Kind of like a blind spot. Kind of like, you know, here's what you're doing, or do you understand what you're doing? Other people are seeing this, but you're not seeing it. And then there's this hidden panel, what a person knows about themselves that others don't know. Kind of a facade. You know, we call that a false bravado. And then there's the unknown panel, what a person doesn't know about themselves and what others don't know. And that's what we say we have to visualize. And we've talked about that enough times. See how, you know, really, how do I see myself? How do I want to see myself in this panel and in the mirror? And so when I'm looking into the mirror, I'm only asking, what do I want to see? That's part of self-reflection. All this kind of ties together, self-reflection, self-knowledge, introspection. So that's where it leads us into the seven rituals of self-mastery. I wish I had a gong or some kind of a music, some intro to this, but This is a thought-out pattern that I've put down over the years. And so the first little ritual, you know, when we talk about rituals, I always love when Walter Bond talks about habits and rituals. And really, that's our, you know, we're made up of habits. And when he starts screaming, it's pretty fun. I'm sure if you get to one of his rallies out there, if you see him at the conference, you know, he's going to start screaming about habits and rituals. He's kind of like one of those Baptist preachers from the South. But really, one of these rituals we talk about, and we mentioned it before, solitude. And I'm just going to set a goal out there and an idea. You got to have 15 minutes of quiet in your life a day. Please, people. I mean, you have to save some time for this ritual. Most of my guys up on the second floor here know they don't mess with me at 12:50 at the end of lunch. I'm taking my 10 minutes. And so the door's shut. And I'm going to be quiet for 10. I mean, at least I'm scheduling that. You have to get it on your calendar. Yes, there's the morning time. Where can you fit some more time throughout the day? I think about this, and probably one of the most famous people in history that talked about solitude was this guy from Jersey. You might have heard of him, Thomas Edison. And in his memoirs, he used to say he would escape into Menlo Park. He would get lost at Menlo Park. That was his laboratory. And he said when he was quiet, that's when he was most creative. And when your brain's quiet, it does. It hears more things. It, you know, it lets you can hear your brain. Kind of hard to deal with all the all the rest of it throughout the day. And as I was looking that up, I looked up and I saw that this man had 1,000 patents in his life. Anybody have a patent out there? I mean, that's pretty impressive. But so yes, we have to get, let's not say any more, get some quiet time. The second little ritual we're talking about is the three-dimensional ritual, the mind, body, and spirit. And after, I think I've mentioned the Heart Math Institute enough times, one of the projects right now they're on is called the Love is Medicine Project, and they keep saying we've got to focus first on our bodies. We've got to look at our bodies, because if we're not healthy, a lot of things don't work. And so we have to really define that. But pretty much what they're saying is that the main way we heal ourselves is by loving ourselves. You think about that for a second. You know, that's a pretty profound statement right there. But we say we think with our whole bodies, not just in the head. We need to understand how our emotions work. We have to consult our hearts more. You heard me say that. Science talks about our emotional IQ, and I think a lot of us really are what we call spiritually sick. And we see a lot of negativity. You know, it's like a virus. Nobody's immune to it. Kind of hard to treat. Kind of overwhelm it there with some positive ideas. But I just really want to say I try to avoid those kind of people. Sorry. But the word I want to use here, and maybe you look at a reflection on yourself, is this word intuition. And it's a word this Love is Medicine Project uses quite a bit. And we say intuition, science really now, we keep talking about the amazing how they study and they can trace this emotional flow through our bodies. And it hits the heart first. Most of the data that comes in, and it's like a cell phone, there you can't see it. These are invisible waves, so to speak, these electromagnetic waves. But we receive the information to the heart. It goes to the gut and then to the head. And really, this is a process we say you have to keep learning and listening to your body. And it's hard to do without this next ritual. And that next ritual, number three, is actually food choices. We've got to make the right food choices. And it might sound old cliche, a little old cliche. You know, Hippocrates called food medicine. And we say, well, you know, I know I'm supposed to eat fruits and vegetables, but I don't like them. And it's like, well, we don't care if you don't like them. Medicine. And, you know, it's fixing our insides. Those fruits and vegetables have chemical compounds and enzymes that actually patch up your blood vessels. We need to eat them. And, you know, we say that old cliche, we are what we eat, but it reminds me of most people on this call don't know who Jack LaLanne is, but he was one of our fathers, our first fathers in fitness, first diabetic in the world, one of the early Mr. Universe guys, did a lot of wacky stuff out in California, but he had what's called the three rules of eating. Rule number one, if man made it, don't eat it. Think about that, you know, the processed foods, he was right on. Rule number two, if it tastes good, spit it out. That was kind of funny, but, you know, he was talking about the sugar. We're getting killed with the sugar, and our taste buds don't even work anymore. And then rule number three was simply repeats rules one and two. So it was kind of a simple and a simplified attitude, but this is a guy who had a TV show in the early 50s and really changed, made a difference in a lot of people's thoughts and lives. So moving along, ritual number four, simply call it abundant knowledge. And, you know, you heard your parents say, you got to be a student of life. We've all heard, you're never too old to learn. Call that the attitude of teachability. No matter how much I know or think I know, I can still learn from a situation. And that was, you know, one of Warren Buffett's phrases is, the more you learn, the more you earn. Okay, I'll take that. So one of my other little rituals, reading to my little child at night, and 5-year-old, the brain really is amazing. It's a sponge. And we just, one of our things is we cover a saint every night. And the other night, I just stumbled on Saint Ralph. Now, come on now. There's a Saint Ralph? I mean, I thought I knew who the saints were. And he was actually a Benedictine from the 9th century. But he was known for his leadership and his love of learning. I'm going to propose right now to set a goal of reading for everybody that's on this call. As we keep talking about reading, set the goal, 30-minute doses. Come on now. We can do this. All right, you can per day. And if you want to argue, okay, 20 minutes. I'm not going any longer, any lower than 20. But this does come with a warning. You have to read the right books. And, you know, we've talked about this, biographies, histories, books that have some content. If you do read the 50 Shades of Grey, mm-hmm. all right, that's fine, but that doesn't count here. But, we are taught to pursue knowledge, as we say. And all this, we call that the wisdom. And a while back, I was looking up wisdom, and I found this definition, and I just loved it. It was resplendent and unfading is wisdom. Resplendent. What a word that is. And you look that one up, it's attractive, impressive. Resplendent and unfading is wisdom. And she is readily perceived by those who love her and found by those who seek her. We're supposed to seek knowledge. We're supposed to seek this wisdom. And it's kind of a beautiful thing when we actually get there, if you think we can get there. So I'm going to leave you there with that one. Ritual number 5, that is the personal reflection. We call it contemplation. Ben Franklin called it the habit of thinking. And in his memoirs, he did it when he came home every night. And so his thing was an evening thing. And he wrote his memoirs at nighttime. Writing was a big deal for him. I can tell you that the monks, my time with the monks, after Vespers in the evening, they would go home, and they would go to their rooms, and that's what they did. They wrote at the time. And having said that, I was on a plane the other day, and one of the captains from United Airlines sat down next to me. We had a great chat. He's going to buy a Jersey Mike's franchise. Thank you, Brian Summers. You're welcome. And, you know, this what he was showing me on his lapel, he actually took it off, and he has these cards that fold out. Oh, and you look at all these pilots. They've got this badge thing. And it piled out, and it was actually the core values of those guys, but actually it was a checklist, and it was a self-awareness. And really what it was a evaluation of every flight. So at the end of the day at that flight, what could we do better? What went wrong? What went right? And they said they would talk more about what went right and kept reinforcing the positive. I thought that was pretty cool. But I think that also is talking about self-mastery. And that really is what keeps us from the animals. And it gives us, you know, it makes us, I think if we don't have that, we call it morally bankrupt sometimes. And we have to know what's right from wrong. And you've probably heard that this phrase before, purpose-driven people. You ready? Shed the shackles of self. That comes off a big book. Shed the shackles of self. Ritual number 6. Early awakening. We've mentioned this a little bit before. But the subject of sleep, you know, that's another habit. I know I found out the better I sleep, the less I need that REM sleep. So science is telling us we need that REM. Because when we're in REM, the brain kind of like backwashes and takes out some of the toxins and kind of like defragging a computer almost. But we say, you know, you can't burn the candles at both ends. You can't be extreme. Moderation. But the sleep thing, you know, another advice, you know, keep the TVs out of the bedroom. That's a tough one. My guys the other day, we were talking about this. I think in this group, the average guy I was with had 6 TVs in their house. I couldn't believe I had one. And, it's, you know, they were just kind of like, but I said, look, man, you got to get the ones out of the bedroom. That's not what that there's for. Got to keep that room dark. But people say, well, you know, I'm sleeping. Find out how you can sleep better. Herbal tea at night, whatever it is. You can't cheat it. I can tell you at one point in time, not long ago, I was cheating. And so what happened was the heart went racing. And so they said, uh-oh. I had to go in. The doctor said, you better check in. I don't like what I'm seeing. And it was actually after a race. And the doctor said, listen, I don't like your EKG. Who's your cardiologist? And I said, well, that'd be the track. I don't have a cardiologist. He said, well, just go get a test. So when I got to the test, the cardiologist, they gave me the test, and they said, Mr. Hertling, we've got to tell you, you need to come in right now because you have massive, severe blockage in every artery, and you have the widowmaker. You can have a massive heart attack at any time now. And this was just a couple years ago, and I said, you know what? Yeah, I don't think so. I think you got the wrong guy. And so they said, no, this isn't anything to joke about. said, yeah, no, I know my body pretty well. And I know, the medicine, et cetera. I know what I've eaten throughout my life. And they said, you better get in right away. And I said, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Because they now have to go in for an operation. But, of course, my wife said, please do this. You don't know. And it's like, I do know. But you can imagine my face on that operating table, and they don't give you any anesthesia when they do a heart catheterization. And you see the doctor looking up, and he said, oh, no, oh, my. Oh, my gosh, you don't have any blockage. You should have some blockage, and my forearms that they have locked down like you're in a Frankenstein laboratory, I said, I'm going to pop these things off, and I'm going to hurt you if you don't get me off of here quickly. This is, again, the fix was in. It was a great miracle, but there was no blockage. But, again, the whole point of this is what happened was I was pushing too hard, but I knew my body, and luckily I did live a good lifestyle. Probably could have had a heart attack. But, no. So I got some good information. So these little stories and these little things that go on. So we'll leave it at that. But we know we have to get up early, but we can't burn those candles at both ends. Last one, my theory for a loop. How about music? I think we forget about music sometimes. And for me, I know it's kind of a spiritual boost. I'll listen to all kinds of different music. But it's, mostly you're done, you're joyful. And I always love, even running down the boardwalk and seeing somebody with their headphones on and just smiling and dancing as they're going down. But, everybody has their favorite playlist. They're all usually meaningful, stirring your own soul, as we say. But you got to have some music. So that's where we're going to kind of start to close up. We say, really, what this helps us to simplify our lives. Number one of those secrets, simplify the life. Enrich our mind. Care for the body. Nurture your spirit. And we do this really with doing little things. Stop picking up the phone every time it rings. Stop eating out 3 times a week. You don't have to read your emails all day long. Manage that. Spend more time with your kids or the ones you love. Watch the sunset. Watch the sunrise. Get outside more. Love the book, Natural Born Heroes. We're actually born, we're supposed to be living outside. We weren't designed to live inside. But you can. There was one thing that was pretty intriguing in that book, which was, you take a test. They showed several different people all over the country taking tests, and they would consistently score higher when they took the same test outside. That just tells you a little bit. So the conclusion here, I think, the ultimate purpose really for all of us is to serve. Our ultimate purpose. When we say, "Well, I don't know my purpose," yeah, you do. I'm going to tell you right now, it's to serve. And when you improve the life of others, you indirectly elevate your own. We've talked about elevating your life by elevating others. For me, I think that's a certain level of sacredness. And you've heard of the random acts of kindness. I love Martin Luther King's phrase, anybody can be great because anybody can serve. You only need a heart full of love, a soul generated by grace. So, when people realize they're here for a purpose, they have a special gift. We say they live to give. And again, that manifesto we have, it all says, give to give. So that's also known as the deathbed mentality. You're going to live each day, it's your last one. It's just a different way of living. Just try that sometimes. But it does create a meaningful life, and I think it's a focused life. So we gave you the quote, the purpose of life is a life of purpose. And now the challenge. I was looking in my library the other day, and I saw this old ratty book way back called The Way of the Pilgrim. I just kind of smiled and picked that up. That was one of those books used in a retreat way back in college. But I looked at the word, I just looked up the word pilgrimage. And the definition of pilgrimage is a journey undertaken for spiritual reasons. Just a journey, really. But listen, here's the question. If you could travel anywhere, where would you go, and why? So it doesn't have to be a pilgrimage like you're the way of the pilgrim. It could be anywhere. It could be anywhere you want to visit. But if you just had $1 million right now in the time, where would you go and why? That is your challenge. You probably don't need $1 million. But. And if you don't have any money, you can hitchhike. I think I shared that pilgrimage already. So, thanks again for listening. The next week's talk, we're talking about the 8 magic words. See if you can guess those. And if you can, I'll give you 1,000,000 good ideas or something. That's about it. So, I'm Keith Hertling, and you are shaping up. Join me at 9 and 11. Oh, that's it.
I'm sorry.